Yes, those ominous tones mean only one thing, that it's the Dark Mark Show. Welcome to the lighter side of the dark side. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian. Very special show today. Fortunately, Hannah will not be here, but we want to wish her the best. Hopefully, you feel better. And she's on my mind, so I'm sorry. But she won't be here, but we have a very special guest, and Hannah's going to be kicking herself. Hopefully, you come back on the show when you're back in town.
Yeah, definitely.
I think you and Beth come on the show together.
Oh,
I think
that'd be fun.
Let's do that sometime when you
yes.
get back. Anyway, who I'm talking to now is an amazing singer, songwriter. Amazing voice, amazing story. If you know her, you know that's the case. If you don't know her, prepare. And Trevor, our producer, I don't think is aware of you. Wait till you hear this. Wait till you hear.
You're not. No.
But you're already so impressed just hearing the sound checks. And he's nodding his head. Yes, this is the wonderful Tara Naomi.
Hello.
And Tara, before
are we supposed to look at the camera?
No,
how does
don't,
that work?
No. Just look at me. We're gonna have
oh,
a conversation.
Good. Okay, good.
No, because I always make that mistake. Every time I was filming a movie last night, which is why I couldn't go to your hotel cafe. And I always I'm just such a narcissist. I always look at the camera when I'm filming a movie. Do you do that?
Yeah. Well, because you know it's there and you're like, I don't know. I mean, someone has to tell me, don't look at it. And then
right.
I think, I don't know. I'm not an actor, so I don't, mm-hmm. I'm not, you know. I think
you've done some acting though, right?
No. I mean, yes. I mean, growing up, I did.
Yeah,
I did a lot of, like, musical theater, and then I went to school for opera. And actually, it was really funny. I'm going to make a long story short. But I was asked, like, maybe 7 or 8 years ago. I was relatively new to L.A., and I had just come back from London, actually. And so I forgot how everything works here. And, and a friend of mine had started dating a guy who was, like, a very well-known television show creator,
you're not going to name names.
No, I hate that. You know, I'm all like, right. I'm not. It doesn't matter. Just know that he was fucking like massive,
yes.
right?
He's
like a star maker, right?
Okay, so he's in the J.J. Abrams, like
huge,
yeah, okay,
like, but more mainstream.
Oh, okay.
And so like, and I like
Shonda Rhimes.
Well, no. Yeah,
okay.
I was trying to keep it secret by saying he would actually. Mm-hmm. No, but like I grew up watching his shows.
Oh,
and
okay.
So,
Stephen Cannell?
Nope.
Stephen Bochco?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. Oh my God, did Stephen Bochco do
Cop Rock? Cop Rock the musical.
I remember that. When
right.
I was a kid, I remember seeing it. It was on. It was the kind of thing I thought I might have dreamt it because it was on. Like I remember watching, seeing an episode
yeah.
as a kid. And then I was like, did that really happen, or did I dream that? Because then it was gone.
It's got to be on YouTube now, though.
Oh, my God. It was so amazing. I remember seeing that and being like, is this – and then it was gone, and so I couldn't ever find it. And I was like, oh, well, maybe I just made that – like, maybe that was a dream I had.
It was a gritty musical about policemen.
It was so good. It was like, freeze.
Yeah. Stop or I'll shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like – you're under arrest.
And they're,
it was
you know,
amazing.
It's you know, the villain and
yeah.
the criminal and the cops were like tap dancing around.
Oh, it was so good. It was like a dream come true.
Right.
It was really like the most absurd thing.
Well, they're
I'd
bringing
ever
back
seen.
Every 90s show, so they might bring that one back.
Oh my God, if they brought back Cop Rock, I think it's a good way to like.
It's better than Murphy Brown. Come on.
Yeah, but wouldn't it like? I think it's a good time for Cop Rock. It would
I think
like
so.
Encourage some like goodwill amongst like you know all of us are like terrified of the police right now, and so maybe if they brought Cop Rock back, it would like
see that's a million
like,
dollar
bridge
idea.
The gap between you know everybody and the cops.
I think that's a million dollar idea. Seriously, because when Cop Rock was on, there was no musical movies.
Yeah.
Now there's musical movies.
There are so many musical movies.
Yeah. The musical's dead for a long time, and then
everything's a musical now.
Yeah. So there you go. I think you're onto something there.
Should I reach out to the friend? Oh, I totally messed up my story.
Yeah, so
though.
What's the story? I
so
forgot.
So the story was
we got derailed into Cop Rock.
Yeah, we took. If everything could only derail to Cop Rock, and everything just like ends up at Cop Rock, then like
you I have mean, the right yeah. to remain silent.
Yeah, it was. It was so amazing.
I'm so embarrassed singing in front of you, but go ahead.
No, but we're sharing this memory that was like that was such a formative memory for me. In as far as it made me question my sanity for like the first time of many times, But yeah, so we were out, we were at brunch, or I can't even remember, we were somewhere. I the brunch was the worst. I put my foot in my mouth, like I totally accidentally insulted him, and it was so embarrassing. But when we first met, we were talking, and he's like, oh, you're so adorable. He's like, do you act? And I was like, no, I'm a singer. And my friend's like kicking me. And he's like,
yeah.
When this person, someone like this person asks you if you act, you say yes.
Right.
Like, you don't say no. Because then it was just like, oh, okay, you know? And it was such a funny moment. And I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't even think about it. I was just like, no.
So you could have been on Sex in the City.
You never. No, it was after that. It was way after that.
This was
only 8 years ago.
Oh, 8 years ago. Okay, I'm trying to think.
But if it had been like 30 years ago, I could have been on Sex in the City.
No, I'm thinking. Yeah, no, I'm just trying to, because we were back at Cop Rock. I was trying to work my way 8 years ago. I don't know if
I'm saying you got it.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying
his new show, whatever his new show is.
Yeah, oh, I don't know. I mean, who knows? But I mean, he just wanted to know if I acted, you know. And I was like, no.
See, you could have been a star.
You know. I mean, I blew it. I totally blew it.
Well, it's never too late. Maybe you've never aspired to an acting career.
No.
No.
I mean, it's like being a musician is painful enough. I don't need like one more form of rejection that I just subject myself to on a daily basis. It's like, I feel like it's masochistic enough to try to be a musician.
Well, you're married to an actor, so you see it every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's like, I think like the only people I always feel worse, you know, for are comics.
Yes.
I'm like, okay, well, being a musician is really shitty a lot of the time and really, really like awful in so many ways. Right. I mean, and I love it, but it's just the stuff that you choose to be subjected to, you know, as a musician, putting yourself out there. But then I'm like, oh, but at least I'm not a comic.
Yes.
Because that would really suck.
Yeah, it's
it just
it's
seems
rough.
Like it sucks. I mean, like, it's like, no, I mean, I love comedy.
No, I know.
But I just feel like everyone I know who's a comic is just like, I'm miserable.
It's a tricky one.
Yeah.
It's tough. Well, I mean, you're putting yourself out there not accompanied by music.
Mm-hmm.
And even the greatest comic, you know, with you, even if somebody maybe doesn't like your song or doesn't like your politics or whatever, they can't deny the talent. A comic, somebody can always deny your talents.
Oh,
they can always not laugh.
That.
Yeah. But
yeah, that would suck too.
Even as good as you are and as much as you kill, there's bound to be that one person that's not laughing. And that's the one you always focus on.
Oh, well, that's the same for musicians.
Yeah.
Like with YouTube, when I first started to get a lot of attention on YouTube, and it was my first time getting lots of feedback, you know, and all of a sudden I was getting like thousands of comments and emails and messages a day.
Right.
And I would read all of them because I'm like, I want to respond to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them, I would say like 90% were really good. And then like 10%.
Right.
They were probably 12-year-olds, too, by the way. Like, sitting there behind their keyboard being like, your nose is ugly, you know?
Oh.
Like, yeah, no, but it was like, you know, they went there. They went low.
I was looking at a lot of your YouTube comments.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, she's hot, you're really hot.
But those aren't the ones that you pay attention to, you know?
And one said, this one stuck out to me because it was unlike, you know, she's amazing or she's hot, was She reminds me a lot of Kurt Cobain in that she has so much talent and so much darkness.
Oh, I never saw that one.
Yeah, that was on, I think that was on, I Think You're Okay.
Know I'm Okay?
No, it was on the Time After Time cover.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was dark?
Yeah,
I
guess.
Like they haven't seen anything if they think that's dark.
Yeah.
That was Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, no, so that was like, and most of the comments were, it's amazing. You know, there were a couple of the originals better, but I mean, you know, that's a matter of opinion. But
oh yeah, you're always gonna get the original.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, and that's, you know, that's what they know.
I mean, and I agree. It's like my cover that I made when I was bored in my bedroom, you know, is not meant to compete with Cyndi Lauper. I mean, give me a break.
Well, but I think your voice is better.
Around.
I think your voice is better.
Well,
that's a matter of opinion. Yeah.
It's a matter of opinion.
So your voice is great.
I love her.
I love her too.
She's amazing.
Before we get started, and we've already gotten started.
Oh, sorry.
No, I just wanted to get it out of the way. We have three sponsors. We have Hillary's Vanity, and if you want to dress up in some really killer cop clothes, or get a parasol, or go to hillarysvanity.com. They have some of the most stylish, fun clothes from size XS to 4XL. They got
awesome.
stuff that I can wear, stuff you can wear,
amazing.
Stuff everybody can wear, and they just Hillary just opened a store. 1018 Hollywood Way in Burbank. Burbank's actually coming up, and it's really cool.
Cool.
It's in the Melrose.
Okay.
So it's right across from Porto. So go down there. Or if you're not in the LA area, go to hilarysvanity.com, H-I-L-A-R-Y-S, vanity.com. Don't say vain like it's a bad thing.
No.
Go to Hillary's Vanity. Yes. Audible, if you go to audibletrial.com/DMS for the Dark Mark Show, audibletrial.com/DMS, free book, free 30-day trial at Audible. Just found out Bob Newhart's got a show on Audible for subscribers where he interviews comics like Sarah Silverman, Will Ferrell. It sounds like a great show. Judd Apatow's on there.
Cool.
Who wouldn't want? And that's exclusive to subscribers. If you go to audibletrial.com/DMS, you have access to that. And you get a free book, and you can cancel any time, but I bet you stick with the trial for all their shows. They have comedy albums. They have Un Cabaret.
Un Cabaret's on Audible?
Oh, they've got so many Un Cabaret things on Audible. Speaking of Sex and the City, they had a special Un Cabaret with the writers from Sex and the City.
Oh,
that's on Audible, so if you go to audibletrial.com. I know you're going on the road, so I know you probably listen to audiobooks. So
yeah.
Go to audibletrial.com/DMS.
Cool.
Get a free book and a free 30-day trial.
Cool.
And also our friend, Lionel Monroe Hat Company on Instagram. Hat Company.
Oh, cool.
Hat. So it's summer. I'm bald. Get a hat.
So I can get a parasol, and I can get a and a hat.
Yeah, we're trying to dress you up, so we got it all.
I see. I'm like taking the hint. I know I'm wearing my overalls. But,
no, you look great. You look great. Okay, so Tara Naomi, and we'll start. Thanks to the wonders of Facebook. God, I'm so glad the stock dropped today.
Wait, what happened? Oh, the stock dropped.
Stock dropped like seriously, Mark Zuckerberg lost $100 billion today.
Wait, what? Really?
Yeah, it just took a nosedive.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, because I want everybody to go back to MySpace because that was fun. But
I liked MySpace too.
Thanks to the wonders of Facebook, I know your real last name.
Oh.
Now is Naomi your real name or is that a pseudonym?
No, that's my middle name.
Okay.
Yeah, so I got rid of the last one because it's long and it has a silent D and it's just like. Nobody
can pronounce it.
Yeah. And if you say, like, your name's Engelbart, people are like, Engelbert Humperdinck?
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And that sucks. Like, it's like,
no. You don't want to be associated with Engelbert
Humperdinck. I mean, but it's just like,
different
no.
Kind of music.
Yeah. Maybe the old school Engelbert, because, you know, Engelbert Humperdinck was, like, classical time, too. And then this, like, cheesy lounge dude.
I'm not up on
too.
Humperdinck, honestly.
There are, like, several Engelbert Humperdincks. I might have dreamt that just like Cop Rock though. I don't know. Like, I think
Engelbert Humperdinck was on Cop Rock.
I know. I think I might have. I'm like, wait, is this true? No, Engelbert Humperdinck was like a classical composer. I think I could be making that up completely. I might be like mixing my signals here. Wires.
He's kind of like Tom Jones in that he started out like as a really good.
The second Engelbert Humperdinck.
Okay.
The one who took his name, I think. Don't quote me on this.
Okay, so there was an Engelbert Humperdinck before there was an Engelbert
Humperdinck. Yeah, I feel like there was an old school Engelbert Humperdinck.
Well, okay.
That might have been like a classical composer or something.
Okay.
But I'm telling you, like, that might have been a dream, just like my Cop Rock.
Okay. Well, I think
fantasy.
We're going to get to a lot of dreamy territory today.
Yeah. It just might be outright untruths.
So you grew up in upstate New York.
I did.
On a farm.
Yeah, for the first couple of years.
Yeah, see, that's like me. I was born in New York City, but we moved when I was like three, so everybody's like,
"Yeah,
oh, you're from New York." I'm like, no, not
you're
really.
Like, kind of not no. at all.
So you're not really a farm girl.
Yes. For my parents grew weed. We weren't.
Really?
Yes.
That explains a lot.
They named me Earth. Yeah. No, I mean, we lived on a farm, but like we didn't have cows. We had like they grew carrots and like marijuana plants.
And that was when it was illegal.
Yes.
But they were at upstate New York. There's a lot of.
They
I
hid
guess people
them.
Look the other way.
They
or?
Hid them in the carrots, and then and my dad. they had like a they had this big vegetable garden, and there was a part of it that was like all weed. And my cousins, my dad. My dad. It's totally unnecessary bit of information, but like I always like to clarify. So like my dad is younger than his siblings by like 15 years. And so his nephews are actually closer to his age. So he would have his nephews, because otherwise that would sound kind of shady. Like his nephews came out to, you know, but his he and his nephews were very close in age.
They're all the same age.
Right. So the three of them would like, oh no, the two of them, sorry. One of them was sort of conservative and one of them was a total hippie.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were twin brothers. Mm. And so his nephew, Brian, would come out to the farm and they were growing the weed out there. And one day, and my dad is really neurotic, you know, he's like has a major anxiety disorder
forever.
And so here he is, he's like doing something illegal And he panicked one night. He swore that he saw, like, men in black suits, like, walking around the perimeter of the farm.
Wow.
So he panicked, and he went out and pulled out all the plants, like, in the middle of the night. Like, went out and just pulled them out.
Don't tell me he smoked at all.
No, I don't even know what he did with it. Like, I mean, I think it just died or something. I don't know. Like, my cousin came back, and he said he was very upset. He came back to check on the weed.
And it was just carrots.
It was gone. It was, like, all pulled. My dad freaked out and panicked.
Yeah. Have a carrot. It's, like, it's not the same.
You can't be, like, a successful drug grower if you're, like, going to freak out all the time.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
I didn't know your dad was Walter White. That's such
a He's so not. I mean, yeah, that was his one experience. He's, like, a good Jewish boy.
Yeah.
And he just, like, decided he wanted to grow his own weed. And then he, like, but it, that's, like, that was the problem.
As good Jewish boys, like, are wont to do.
Right. And then also, as good Jewish boys are you know, very likely to do, like, freak out and be, like, super neurotic.
Right.
You know? It's like Woody Allen growing weed
or something. Yeah.
You know, he'd panic. Or, like, I mean, my
make
dad's
sure there's
not
enough
that.
Water on there, you know. Yeah.
No, like someone's going to, you know, he got nervous. He got nervous about police and, like, you know, I really doubt they were up there, you know, checking in on Carl Engelbart's weed garden.
I don't think so, yeah.
But he got scared.
Unless it was, it was a small town, the sheriff's got nothing to do. I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know. But what I heard, and maybe this is the weed, I don't know, but I think this may have something to do with the weed, but I heard that when you were an infant, you were singing.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
How's that possible?
I don't know.
You were singing before you're talking?
Yes, this is true. It's actually true. Yes.
Do you know what you were singing? Did they know what you were singing?
Okay, so there are a couple stories about this. One, so at first, when I was 8 months old, I wasn't singing words. I was just like vocalizing, like, la-la, right. Like, la-la-la.
You're a musical genius, but you're not that much of a musical genius.
I wasn't I wasn't talking, you know. But I was singing, like, melodies, and that freaked people out, apparently. And then when I was, like, one, like, a little over one, I sang Happy Birthday, which also freaked people out. I sang Happy Birthday to, like, my dad or something.
Wow.
And, yeah, it freaked somebody out with that.
You'd heard it and you internalized it.
Yeah, I just learned Happy Birthday. I don't
know.
Wow. And then, yeah, I mean, I started talking really early and, like, I never shut up. So,
I can see that.
Yeah. So, you know.
So that's amazing.
Just never stopped.
And then you took opera?
Yeah.
And see, this is where what you're telling me is not congruent with what I've been reading, because I've been doing a lot of research on you.
Oh.
I've been immersed in the Naomi world all week.
Wait, what's not lining up?
Well, you, the town that you grew up in.
Yeah.
You said there's only jazz and classical, but you live with hippies.
Yeah, but they weren't really hippies. I mean, no, we listened to, there wasn't only jazz, we didn't only listen to jazz and classical.
Okay.
Like, as far as training goes, I wasn't aware that I could, like, go to school for rock music.
Right.
I didn't realize. Like, if I'm going to go to college and study music, I have to study, like, classical, that's the education part of it, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't realize I could go to someplace like Berkeley, you know?
Right.
But no, I mean, we grew up listening to a lot of non-classical, mostly.
I remember. You know? Yeah.
But also, my parents weren't, like, they weren't
a
like
lot of Grateful Dead, Pink Floyd.
No. I mean, my parents weren't really into the Dead. That's like, you know, it's like they weren't. They were more into like John Denver.
Oh, okay.
And you know, John Denver and James Taylor, and then ABBA.
Everybody loves ABBA.
ABBA, whatever.
Everybody's
call it.
Mom likes ABBA.
Yeah, like I just lots of car rides with ABBA playing in the background.
Right.
But then like also lots of James Taylor, mm-hmm. and my dad loved Johnny Cash, like a lot of old blues
right.
stuff and old country, mm-hmm. Merle Haggard and like all, yeah. like a ton, like a lot of really old Willie Nelson and stuff.
Right.
You know, that's really what I grew up on.
Okay.
You know, I didn't grow up on classical music. I just didn't know that. Like if I wanted to be a singer, I thought that was what I don't know. That was. I don't know what my problem. It wasn't the internet, you know.
That's
I
right.
couldn't like go on and watch YouTube videos and be like, oh, there's like I can now. It's like every 12-year-old's a songwriter because
yeah.
they go on and watch YouTube and they're like.
But are they a good songwriter?
Some of them are. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, some of them aren't.
A lot of them aren't. I would probably say most of them aren't, and then the ones that are just like what?
Yeah.
You
right,
know?
Right. No, it's just yeah. It's the same way. Same way with comedy.
Yeah.
See a lot of bad, but then you're like, what's going on there?
Are they like 12? I feel like there aren't 12-year-old comics, though.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Oh, sure.
But they don't know. I feel like comedy, you have to have like a, your life has to get crazy first before you can be funny.
That's what I think. But that's the people don't. Here's the thing. And I've told this, I've said this on the show, and I think I said this to our mutual friend, Beth Lapidus.
Yeah.
This is the reason I met you, because I saw you at an Uncabaret show.
Yes.
I haven't been on an Uncabaret show in a long time. Went for the comics. They were good. I mean, she always has a stellar lineup of comics.
I love it.
But what blew me away was you.
Oh,
as the musical guest. You sang a song, and we're still trying to figure out what that song is. But my friend Ruth, who came with me, was sobbing next to me, and I was holding back tears myself. It was like literally out of Mulholland Drive. Like, you were singing, and she was sobbing, and I was holding back tears and holding her. That's how moving it was.
Sorry.
No, it's good. It was cathartic. You saw how she came up to you after the show.
Yeah.
And how I came up to you after the show. Yeah. It was it's a different. I mean, it's not comedy, but it's a different. Yeah. Different. I mean, when you affect people on that level, when you make them cry, I've made people cry. During my one man shows, not everything is. And my act is comedy.
Right.
I've made people cry, and
right.
I sort of feel bad. And also, I've done poetry readings where I've made people cry. And once again, it's a mixed feeling.
Yeah.
You don't want them to cry, but then you're glad that they share that experience with you.
Oh, I think
you touch that emotion.
For them.
Yeah.
It's good for them because, like, that's why people go to see art.
Because,
like, they want to feel something.
Right.
I mean, not everybody. Some people go to see, like, Justin Bieber or something. And they're probably not there to have, like, a cathartic experience.
Right.
But a lot of people go to see art because it's like they maybe can't access their emotions the way we can, you know? And which is like a blessing and a curse. It's like, it's like great. Yeah, it's great to be able to like access all of your emotions all the time, and it also sucks.
Right.
So, but that's what artists are good at, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what we have to give is to like connect people with the stuff that they might not just readily connect with.
Right.
Otherwise. So I think it's good. I mean, I've never had anyone come up to me angry that I made them cry.
No.
Like, it happens a lot, actually. And
they usually give you a big hug.
Yeah,
a big,
they're
long
like, thank
hug.
You, you know? And they're like, yeah, it's like they felt something. And it's not always that they're crying because they're sad, you know? It's like they're crying because they're moved.
Right.
And so that's not bad. Like, I love when I see, I mean, I cry probably, I cry at everything. I cry at, like, commercials.
Yeah.
There's, you know, it's like, it's my husband laughs at me all the time because we'll look over if there's any moment in a movie or a TV show or anything that's even mildly touching, he'll just start looking at me like just waiting to see if I'm crying.
Yeah,
and I always am. He just teases me, you know, he likes to tease me and, like, make fun of me for crying. I cry at, like, you know, dog adoption posts on Facebook.
Cop Rock.
I probably would cry at Cop Rock at this point. I mean, maybe not. No, I think I would just love Cop Rock.
Right.
I just would love it.
Yeah.
Stephen Boschko, if you're listening.
I think Stephen Boschko passed away, but
shit.
Yeah. That's anyway. But what I was gonna say is, I told Beth when she was on the show, and I've told other guests that in this day and age, because music, and we're gonna talk about this because this has a lot to do with you.
Yeah.
Because you are, don't take this the wrong way. You're the Dane Cook of music. And let me tell you why. And
help me out with that one.
Okay.
Isn't he like a total bro?
No, this has nothing to do with the axe. He found a way on MySpace to remarket comedy.
I see.
And whether you like his act or not, and actually he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
But you know, his act is his act. It's high energy. I'm not that into it. But he found a way online to connect with fans and to really become a superstar.
Right.
And really sell. And you were a pioneer.
Yeah.
You paved the way for Justin Bieber.
Yeah, that's true.
People don't know.
Sorry.
Let me explain. Well, and other people as well. But, well, in 2006, you were the number one musical artist on YouTube.
Yeah.
You had a song that was inspired by Al Gore.
Yep.
And the Inconvenient Truth movie.
Yep.
And say it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I got that right. I was just like,
totally
if I get that far.
You're killing it.
Yeah.
You're
so, okay.
It.
So, inspired by The Inconvenient Truth, say it's possible. You put the video out on YouTube.
Yeah.
And it just exploded.
Yes.
People responded to you, and they came out with their own videos and their own cover songs, and it just became a big sensation.
Yeah.
And why do you think that song resonated with people of all the songs that were on YouTube at the time?
I think it was a couple of things. I think it was a lot of things. I think there was it was partly about the song. I think then it was also partly about seeing this girl who was like sort of relatable and people going, oh, wow, maybe I could do that too. You know, I think it was inspiring to people to see someone doing something that nobody was doing. And they're like, oh, well, she's sitting in her apartment, you know, with a guitar and just like, putting these videos up, maybe I could do the same thing, you know? Right. I think that was what a lot of it was. I think, I mean, I think the song's a good song, but like, it had to be more than just that, you know?
Well, I think, seeing you live, everything that I've been, you know, I've been all the media and all the things I couldn't imagine anybody looking at you and saying, oh, I could do that.
Well, your voice be surprised.
Your voice is so distinctive and so ethereal. And I was going to ask you, obviously you've had training, you've had classical training, you have had opera training.
Yeah.
But the voice, it's unlike any voice I've ever heard.
Oh, thank you.
And I mean, I'm sure I'm not the first person to tell you this. I mean, there's a trained quality, but there's something indefinable.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out who you sounded like, and I was looking at, listening to other, I actually started listening to Beth Orton and other people, and I was like, she doesn't sound like her at all, but there's that weird quality.
I think I sound, some people have said that sometimes there's a quality that sounds a little bit like Dolly Parton, which I take as like a super compliment.
I know, that's one of your heroes. I
love her. And then another one, like I'm just thinking of anybody's ever said I sound like, another one would be Patty Griffin.
People I can have see said that
I
a
sound
bit.
A little bit like a little bit like Patty Griffin, a little bit like Emmylou Harris, and a little bit like Dolly Parton is what I get a lot.
Okay.
I mean, not a lot, but like
it's very country, but it's not country.
But I don't sing country music.
You don't sing country.
No.
So you think that's what it is? You're bringing that country dynamic to...
I don't know.
So...
I don't know. I think I was also just really, really like relatable, really. And I think it was... I don't know, you know, and I think it was also like this lo-fi quality in my videos, which was just purely not, it was not intentional at all. It was like, I didn't have lights, so I took a lamp and I tipped it over and it like made this really like bright shadow on my face. And like, it was just kind of like, I had this curtain from Target in the background.
Right.
And I think it just people, I don't know, you know, who knows why something connects with people, right?
And it's so weird. I mean, it's so weird in 2018 to think.
Yeah.
Of all the artists on YouTube,
because
now YouTube has a music channel,
they're
streaming.
Totally,
you were number one.
Yeah,
P. Diddy was number two.
Yeah,
which I can't believe he was that number two in 2006. But okay, I mean,
you were
higher than Metallica. You were higher than Guns N' Roses. You were higher than
they hadn't discovered it yet. I mean,
than Britney Spears. You were higher than everybody.
Those people weren't going to go on and make YouTube videos. You know what I mean? What happened was like the major labels then found out about it. All the labels found out about it, and just it became another platform.
And they started putting their videos. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like then you know, but for a minute it was like actual like people that you could discover that you know there wasn't money behind it. It was just like actual people doing something and we had a chance to be seen and heard as well, which was really nice because now you can't cut through. You know,
to tell me about it.
Yeah, it's like there's so much out there that like anything that breaks through at this point usually has a ton of money behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it looks like, even if they you know say it doesn't,
right.
It does.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I'm sure there is the odd exception here and there, but
right.
I don't know anybody.
But you, based on that.
Yeah.
Because I saw an interview that you did on the Today Show.
Oh yeah.
Years ago.
Was I wearing like a horrible green dress?
I don't recall, but...
with really bad hair, and they made me look orange.
Is that what happened? I don't know.
They do your makeup, you know?
No, I know.
It's the worst.
Yeah, I'm sure. But the guy seemed, like, really befuddled, and it was, like, it was so weird to I mean, because YouTube's so much a part of our lives now.
Yeah, yeah.
That, like it was so, like...
yeah.
It was so weird just to go back then. It was like, wow, they've got these kind of things on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at this OK Go video. That's amazing. I'm like...
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, okay. And that had money behind it, you could tell.
Yeah, I think. I mean, you'd think, right?
Yeah, I mean, somebody was choreographing
production
them.
Yeah, the production high. Value
was fine. But you were saying, so based on this, from what I understand, and so you signed to a major label.
Yeah.
Island Records signs you.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah.
You know, a historic label. Bob Marley was on it. U2 was on it.
Yeah.
And
this is Island in the UK. People think Island here is like Island Def Jam.
Okay.
You know, so it wasn't that. It was Island Records in the UK, which was the one that, like, Bob Marley and U2 and, that was that one.
And they put out an album.
Yeah.
And from what you've said in interviews, and I'm sure this is a bit of an exaggeration, you kind of alienated your YouTube audience.
Yeah, I think I did.
Well, first off, the album cover's shitty. I got to be honest.
Oh, the one for, the major label album?
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, it sucks.
It's awful.
It's the worst. They were trying to
you
make
look,
me into
you look
something.
You look awful.
I look pissed, right?
You look so pissed on the album cover.
I think I knew. I mean, look, when I first landed in London, When I first had my first week at the label, I went in for meetings with everybody, and like the head of marketing was like, sat me down. He sat down in his office.
Look how miserable you look.
Oh, well, also, like, I wasn't eating. Do you see how skinny I was?
Oh,
I was,
yeah.
like, wasting away because some London shop girl was made a dig at me because it basically said, like, insinuated that I was chunky. And so then I just, like, stopped eating. And they're like, oh, you're looking...
You look like you're falling asleep.
Fabulous.
Look at this, Trevor.
Yeah.
How bad is that Albert cover?
I know. It sucks. It totally sucks. Look, I'm not gonna deny it. It sucks. Like, the whole thing sucked.
No, but here's the thing. I went on Amazon.
Yeah.
All 5-star reviews. There's good songs on there.
Yeah, the songs are good. The production's a mess.
Yeah.
It's like a hodgepodge.
I was listening to the Vicodin song on the way here.
Yeah.
And it was weird because there were sounds. Like, I thought, like, I hit something or there's something going on the road.
Yeah.
But it was like the background strings and things. And
there were strings on that song?
Something like that. Yeah. I don't know what. I think there was like a cello or something.
Really?
It was like, but it was an awful cello.
I don't remember. I blocked it all out. I think I blocked everything out.
Yeah. Because it was like, I'm listening to the song. I'm digging the song. You and the guitar. But there's like these weird sounds and they're going all over the place.
Yeah. There was a lot of weird sounds happening.
Yeah. So that. I don't think you alienated your entire YouTube audience.
No, I think it was like, so I was telling you, like, so I got there and this guy was like, sat down and he's like, he put his hands on his desk. He's like, so tell us about this YouTube. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, that was the point when I was like, oh, I'm totally screwed. Like, they didn't even know what it was. Like, they were curious. They were like, well, what is it? How does it work?
You know? You think they signed you to get some insight into YouTube?
No. I mean, that would have been a pretty, they could have, you know, that would have been a pretty expensive way to get educated. I think they signed me because they thought they saw the momentum and they thought, great, we're gonna like throw a record out and just like put this girl into like the machine,
right?
And we know how to amplify this. I think they had good intentions. I think they, you know, really thought that. And well, that was what I thought. I thought, look, everything I built on my own with nothing, with like no money and no support. I didn't even have a manager or anything. And I'm like, you know, I think my thinking was, if I could do that on my own, then if I hand this over to the professionals, they're going to, like...
Yeah, someone in Thriller.
Yeah, it's like, if I could do this on my own, like, what could they do? And, you know, and the reality was, like, the magic of it was of everything that I was doing on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got there, I was sort of like, oh, don't be so accessible. Do you want to be a rock star? Do you want to be a YouTube star? And
right.
They didn't understand. You know, there just wasn't this constant contact. Like, there was no Twitter. There was now it's like.
There was MySpace.
Yeah, there was MySpace, but there wasn't, like, the constant interaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't, like, the constant dialogue and the accessibility of everybody.
There wasn't a phone.
There wasn't a smartphone. Right.
You had to go on your computer to get on MySpace.
Yes, yeah. So it's like, now it's labels can't buy that, you know, like they pay for that kind of connection to people, and there's people running social media accounts trying to like be accessible all the time and whatever. And but back then there was much more of a like if you're a musician, if you're a rock star, like you're not supposed to be accessible. Nobody's supposed to really relate to you. You're supposed to be like, you know, they're supposed to think that you're much better than they are. And like, you know, and I wasn't that way at all. I was like, here's how you play my song. And, you know, making videos of like how to play it for people and stuff, you know.
Did they do a video for Say It's Possible?
They remade the video that I made with my friends.
Okay, so just a bigger budget. And
and it sucked. It was like the original concept was an original concept, and it was super cool. And then they're like, well, that worked, and let's make it better. And so then it was like flashier production, but like the same exact idea with having people write in, you know, what would you do if anything were possible? And like they just did the same thing.
But it wasn't the people writing it. It was a guy, scriptwriter, doing it.
No. It was actual people.
Oh, okay.
There were actual people that wrote in, like a second round of people, which was actually, that was cool because we couldn't fit all the submissions in on the first video.
Right.
So then this was like another opportunity for people to get their stuff in that like didn't get in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But then it was like the same concept and I was doing the same thing. But now instead of being like in my crappy overcoat under a bridge in L.A., I was like... all dressed up in like this red dress and tons of makeup, like in the streets of London. And it was just so weird, you know? it was just, I don't know. I don't really, I think they thought it was going to be an easy, you know, kind of like an easy grab. Like, okay, well, this girl has all this momentum. We're just going to like throw an album out there and everybody's going to buy it and it's going to be great, you know?
Well, let me ask you this too. You were signed to the label around the time Amy Winehouse was signed.
Yeah.
How did they, and unfortunately, you know, maybe in the reality they didn't do it right, but how did they push her the right way and push you the wrong way?
Oh, it's just a different, whole different trajectory. Right. I mean, a lot of it has to do with your team, honestly. Like, if you have a bunch of, if you have people around you that kind of, like, understand who you are and help and are, like, advocates, like, for right. you and for what you want, that's what you really need. And actually, to be honest, it wasn't even the label that did anything wrong. Mm-hmm. The problem was I then started, so I didn't have a manager when everything blew up on YouTube, but I was in a production deal mm-hmm. with the guy that made my album. And so, like, the producer. And so then he was sort of like, well, you should let me manage you because nobody's going to care about your career the way that I do. And, you know, and so I was like, okay. And so then I was managed and produced by the same person. And I just, and I didn't, and it was crazy because before that, to be honest, I have, like, everyone that I knew, we were having all these conversations about how I needed to get away from this person because the demos that he was doing were not right. And, right. like, I mean, my lawyer and my brother, like, everybody were, like, and I just was so guilty. Like, I felt so loyal and guilty. I didn't want to be that person that, like, he was the first person that paid me, you know, that was like, oh, I see. He wasn't the first person that was like, oh, you're talented. But, like, he was the first person that was, you know, that
said I could put your take yeah, your career in the next
yes,
step.
Yes, exactly. And so I felt really loyal to him. And mm-hmm. they were like family. You know, right. I came out here, I didn't know anybody. And he and his family were like family to me. They were like almost like parents or something, you know. And it was really hard for me to get away from that. Instead of breaking away, I like doubled down and made him like my manager too. Right. You know, it's just like all the dumb mistakes. I've made all the dumb mistakes. I actually really like that. I'm actually working on something right now to share so much of this knowledge because I've done everything. Like I've been an independent artist. I've been a major label artist. Mm-hmm. I've like, you know, played Wembley Stadium and I've played for like five people in a living room. And like I've booked my own tours and I've had tours booked by CAA. And like, you know, it's like I've had all these extremes and like everything in between. Right. And I want to like share all that with people because there's a lot of stuff that like there's a lot of people like writing books and telling you how to do stuff that have never actually done it before.
Right.
Because like most of the time, if somebody, you know, has been a major label artist or whatever, like they're not going to necessarily tell you how their experience was if it didn't go great. You know, they're not going to like give you the access to their contracts and like show you the deals and stuff. What's going on?
No, I was just nothing's going on. No, okay. Hannah's fine. I just
good.
Because I'm trying to time out when you're going to sing.
Oh,
because I'd love to hear you sing.
Sure, whatever.
And I was trust me, there's so many more questions I have for you. But why don't we since that we had that awkward pause?
Okay.
And Trevor told me there was about a half hour left. I say, I know it just goes by so fast.
It goes by so fast.
I know. But what song are you going to sing now?
Well, why don't I play Machine Age?
Because yes, that's a not your latest single, but that's a newer single.
Yeah.
And that was inspired by what's going on these days, politically.
Yeah, I was thinking about it last night. I played last night, and I was thinking about this song when I was on stage, and it's like, it's a protest song, right? And like, protest song is almost like, you know, I write a lot of songs that would be considered love songs and like sort of heartbreak songs and like emotional catharsis kind of songs. And I feel like protest songs are kind of all of the above, you know? Because it's like, obviously, in order to protest something, there has to be some expectation or some feeling of love that's been just totally crushed, you know? And in this case, it's like the state of our country.
But this goes back to possible because that was also inspired by politics and what's going on. And you were able to put a very loving spin on what really is a bad situation and needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
And go right ahead.
Okay. I woke up in a new America. Back when I went to sleep, the pain I felt now seems so sweet. I was pounding my fist on the prison door of privilege. Now I'm longing for the walls that held. machines don't feel emotion, they're indivisible as hell. And they do what must be done to keep our nation safe for some. Damn those hippies who convinced me there was room for everyone. Your purple mountains, spacious skies are only for the free. They mean nothing if they're out there only for the few to see. Lady Liberty held a hostage while the Brotherhood decreed. Always been a dirty game, that way nothing's really changed. But I didn't see this coming, no, I guess I looked away. No, I swear I didn't see, I guess I must have looked away. Our screams are a recurring theme. And I screamed so many times, I used my voice till I was hoarse. And don't tell me I'm a poet in a machine age, when you've programmed all my words into a lifeless machine brain.
There's something about you singing live that, and I've listened to your entire Spotify catalog this week. Thankfully, I'm still under that 3 months for a dollar thing, but so I don't know how many pennies you're going to get out of that. But
that's okay.
Well,
take it.
We can talk about that. But there's something about you singing live that I don't think has been captured in the studio.
I agree. Well, the new stuff hopefully is going to change that.
Okay.
But yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, at first it's because I wasn't working with the right producers, you know? I mean, it was pretty straightforward in that sense.
But even on a recent album, I Know You're Okay.
Yeah.
Which I is mean, good, but then the acoustic stuff at the end.
Yeah.
That's the stuff you want. Yeah, that's
totally,
amazing.
Totally. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of times people kind of tried to put a much more pop spin on what I did, like kind of like a radio-friendly kind of spin on it. And I never, I don't know, like I always wanted to work in a way where I could really capture the raw, like the rawness of what it is, you know, and the power of that. And I think really it's about me as an artist, you know, because like for whatever reason, I didn't pick the right people and I didn't like, I just didn't know. I think I didn't know what kind of artist I was. Like I did, but then it was like, I don't know. It all has to be about me as far as like why things didn't turn out the way I wanted them to, right? So it's like, I guess I just didn't know myself as well. I didn't trust myself. That's what it was, you know? Right. Like, I didn't trust myself to go, hey, I know who I am. I know what I want to do. I know how I sound best. Mm-hmm. Instead, I was like, what do you think I should do? You know? Like, I was looking at all these people outside of myself to like, validate me in, like, every way. And so when it came to my music, the same thing happened. It was like, oh, well, I don't really trust myself to make good decisions about myself. So, I mean, I, like, hated myself
for
most
artist.
Of my life. You know? Yeah. It was like, I mean, yeah, but it's like, so you can be an artist and like really know who you are and like insist on that. The best artists are, you know, the best artists. But I think like for some of us it takes longer, and for me it took a lot longer. I mean, I kind of had a weird stunted, you know, late teens, early 20s. Like the time when you're really figuring out who you are.
Right.
My life was a mess, and so like I think it took me a lot longer to kind of figure out, just to sort my shit out and like figure out who I am and who I want to, what I want to say and like. And what it means to be the artist that I am and not, you know, what other people think I should be. Just because the thing is, like, I can sing however I want to sing.
Right.
Like, if you want to ask me to sound like Britney Spears, I can, like, I can imitate any voice.
Okay.
I can sing, like, four octaves at least. Like
I believe it.
And it's like, and any texture, like, when I used to sing on commercials, that was what they loved because they could be, okay, now be, you know, this... Style.
Oh, really? I didn't know. You sang on commercials?
Yeah, before I signed my deal, I did. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like,
I loved it.
Anything
it
I would
so
have seen?
Fun. Oh, my God, probably. Like a ton of like McDonald's and Burger King and like.
So you're the one going, I'm loving it. Like that was you?
That wasn't me. No.
Okay.
Oh, God, I wish. No. Oh, my God, that would have been the best. I'd be rich.
Yeah.
But especially because back then it's like the residuals were amazing.
Oh, yeah.
This was like before everything was a buyout and SAG doesn't like. And nothing was SAG anymore, you know.
Right.
But nothing is now. But like,
I'm sure the "I'm loving it" girl is. I think there's a couple voices on there. But
oh, I used to go into the studio to record those things. I used to make so much money just like going and singing for 2 hours
yeah.
more than I would make in like a year otherwise. You know, it was crazy with residuals. It was nuts. But that's not really like that anymore in my experience. But like, because it was like 10 years ago,
right?
You know. So
now the big money is if you get your song on a TV show or you know,
but it's less and less.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends. If you're like super famous, then it's a lot still. But like a lot of times now, there's people willing to just do it for the exposure. And once
that's always the way.
Yeah. So like once that happens, it's like, oh well, you're not willing to do that for like $1,000, and you're just like, I thought this is how I'm supposed to make money now.
Yeah.
You know, because I thought all the other ways are no longer an option.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So, but so, and I do have to get to this, but so because you were talking about Wembley Stadium.
Oh yeah.
From what I understand, Al Gore personally asked you to sing on the Live Earth concert. That's the story.
Well, he didn't personally. So I met him at a party.
Yeah, because I thought like he texted you or something.
No, his office did.
Oh, okay.
Like it wasn't him personally. The office of it was Kevin Wall's office.
Hey, Terry, it's Al.
Yeah,
what are you doing Saturday night?
No, but I did accidentally send him a Friendster request. Like, so it was when I was signing up for my Facebook. And, yeah, it was like, so it was like.
I didn't know Al was on Friendster.
Oh, it was so embarrassing. It was like, and I meant to write Facebook. I was probably drunk or something. And I accidentally signed up for Friendster, which, like, I didn't have a Friendster account,
right.
You know. And I'm like, oh, and so I signed up. And I meant to sign up for Facebook. It must have been like 2000. Oh, well, it was
2007.
It was at least, yeah, it was like 2007. So I was signing up for Facebook and my artist page, and I accidentally sign up for Friendster, and then it's like, do you want? And then I accidentally, I must have been drunk, because then it was like, and then I accidentally clicked the thing where it's like, do you want to invite everybody in your contact list, you know? And I somehow clicked that, and next thing I knew, I was like, oh no, oh no, and I'm looking at it just like,
well, Al Gore got some spam. You want to join Friendster? Tara's waiting for you.
Yeah, and I'm like, he probably even. I mean, like Friendster, every like, I feel like my mom was off Friendster before then. Like it was like not a thing for a long time. I don't even. I can't believe it was still active at that point.
Oh, okay,
you know?
That was the end of Friendster.
I mean, I think so.
Maybe Al Gore, like maybe he.
He was probably just catching up.
No, he probably like was the one that said, "Okay, knock off, get Friendster out of here." He probably talked to like some, you know, some people in the Obama administration and. Yeah, they took out the guy from Friendster. Who knows?
To make room for Facebook?
Yeah.
I don't. This sounds like some conspiracy theory shit.
I don't know. I don't have a. I can neither confirm or deny. Okay. But, So you met Al Gore at a party.
Yes. Well, at the Universal Music Grammy party.
Okay.
So it wasn't just like I was going to a house party down the street in Echo Park or something. It was like no. I mean, I had just signed with Universal and Island Records, and so the Grammys were in February, and I had just signed in January, and so they asked if I wanted to go, and I was like yes. And so I didn't go to the Grammys. I just went to the party, the after party.
Oh, because he's a Grammy winner.
Yes. And in the Universal family.
So, oh, okay. So you're on the same label as Al Gore.
Right. So, I mean, the movie, you know, the studio, Universal, I guess, is the ones that released his film. And so.
And ironically enough, he did not have a parental sticker on his album.
He didn't. No. Oh, I did. Did I?
Probably.
I did. Yeah, because I had like, all, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess you didn't run into the tipper. But that's for the 80s kids out there. So you go up to Al Gore. Was he familiar with the song?
No, I told him about it. Okay. I was like, because I had just written it, you know. I mean, I hadn't just written it, but like everything had just sort of happened, and it was just like blowing up. And I was like, I wrote this song, and it was inspired by your film. And I went to see your film, and I came home, and I freaked out. In the morning, I wrote the song, and it changed my whole life, you know. Mm-hmm. And like I'm here now because I just signed with Universal and Island, and they're gonna like release the album. And he was like, wow, that is a what a story, you know, and like these politicians, like they have such a way of making you feel like you're the only person in the world when you're talking to them. And he's really good at that. And so I was just like, oh my God, this is amazing. And it was just one of these crazy experiences.
And yet it's a little sincere and a little fake at the same time.
He comes across as super sincere.
Okay.
I mean, like, and I've heard the same thing about Bill Clinton. I've heard that like when you're talking to Bill Clinton, it's just like, you could swear that like, he absolutely adores.
I've seen that in person. I actually did a vlog on the Hillary rally, and he went out. I mean, he didn't really talk to me. He went out and took pictures and selfies with everybody.
Wow.
But you could see him really making sure that everybody
got
his attention. But the weird thing was, Steve Aoki DJ'd at it.
Oh wow!
This is honestly when I knew Hillary was going to lose, for better or for worse.
Oh no!
Because this was like a week before the election.
Oh,
and people were there for Steve Aoki.
Oh, they were not. Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you sure?
I know. I went to a Trump rally too.
Oh God.
And they were so into, like, they were really into Trump, for better or for worse.
Oh God.
When I went to the Hillary rally, very apathetic.
Really?
Except for, like, there's actually, when you listen, I'll send you the video. You can hear on the video somebody's like, I'm here for Steve Aoki.
No.
Like when Clinton's talking.
That sucks.
That's when I knew. Is
everything okay?
No, that's Hannah. And
is she okay?
Let's ask. Hannah, are you okay?
Yeah, I just got home and got my phone.
Okay, you're on the air, and Tara says hi.
Hi, Hannah.
Hi. Hello. Hi, everyone. Sorry about my little.
There's no apology necessary, but I did tell Tara what a fan of her music Grandpa is.
Grandpa's adorable, by the way.
Yes, and I was listening to it while I was doing my makeup before I was to leave to go to the show. It's beautiful music.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So let me call you in about 15, 20 minutes, if that's okay.
All right.
Okay.
Sounds good. All right.
About 15 minutes. Trevor says hi, too.
Cool. And, hi.
Yeah, and... He's going to meet us at Bar Sinister next time.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, bye.
Bye.
So Hannah's okay. Hannah had an accident. It sounds like she's all right.
Yeah.
Okay. So Al Gore's office contacts you.
Yeah. Well, it was the office of his production partner, Kevin Wall.
Did he produce the Live Earth concert?
Kevin Wall did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is Trevor. This is who was on the concert. 80,000 people in Wembley Stadium. You know, some people you may have heard of, like Genesis, Madonna, Metallica, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Foo Fighters,
Black Eyed Peas,
and Tara Naomi.
and more people.
Oh, stop! Spinal Tap.
Spinal Tap was that was like the big one for me.
Okay.
Like I really didn't care about Black Eyed Peas or whatever.
Did they? But, I mean, because I heard all the bass players played on Big Bottom. I'm surprised.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Were you one? Did you grab a bass or?
No. I didn't. I'm not a bass player.
So were you? I mean, backstage, were you amongst these people? Were you hanging out? Did you meet these people?
No, because I was so scared.
Yeah.
I was so freaked out. I was like,
you weren't hanging with Phil Collins and Madonna and Fergie.
With anybody. Yeah. I was sitting in my little dressing room, freaking out.
I could imagine.
I was so scared, and I thought I was like, it's 80,000 people.
And not only that, Chris Rock and Ricky Gervais and some of the biggest comedians introduced the acts.
Oh God,
Did anybody introduce you?
I think so, and some the British press are the worst. By the way,
why?
Like, they're just really snarky. Like, they love to say really snarky things. And, like, I mean, have you ever read, like, British tabloids?
Yeah.
They're the worst. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they're really, they just go for it, mm-hmm. you know? And the press, like, you know, the British humor is it's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's very sharp and very, like, smart. And, you know, and, like,
they're very cutting.
Very cutting, yes. Mm-hmm. And, like, and if they, you know, they take digs. Like, they're real.
Who dug at you?
Oh, I don't know. Some asshole. You know, it's just like, who the fuck is this? Like that kind of thing.
But, I'm gonna take a dump in their fish and chips. Who bagged on you?
I can't remember. Yeah. I don't know.
What did they say?
Oh, just like insinuating like, oh, who the hell is this? I've never seen her. Like, who let Al Gore pick the music? You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing.
And I was watching the clip. Yeah. As I said, I've immersed myself in everything, all things Naomi, and I could see just because I'm a performer.
Yeah.
I mean, if you weren't a performer, you couldn't see this, but I could see the nerves for about a minute.
Yeah.
And then you had this big smile.
Yeah, did you see? That was so amazing. You know what happened was I looked up, and that was such a clear point for me. I was so nervous.
Yeah.
Like, I actually told, so I had this guitar tech, and he was, he was a very sort of famous football hooligan. So his face was, like, sewed back together. You know, he was like a thug. Like, if people here, they don't know the culture, maybe.
Right.
But, like, the football hooligans, it's like gangs. They're serious. And he was he was named Deptford John. He was from Deptford. You know, it was like, he was like a real badass.
Yeah.
And now he was a guitar tech and super sweet guy. You know, but like his face looked like it had been.
So this is like a gang member that became a guitar tech in America.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so he was a big guy. And so I was standing there with him, and he was real sweet. And I was standing there with him, and I'm like, dude, I'm so fucking scared. I'm freaking the fuck out. I'm like, if I pass out, and I was serious, I wasn't joking.
Yeah.
I was like, if you see me pass out, just come drag me off the stage.
Right.
And like my parents were there, and my brothers, and my aunt and uncle, they all flew over from the U.S. And I'm like, I'm afraid I'm gonna pass out on a teleprompter, like whatever. I mean, not teleprompter, the screens, the big screens.
Right.
Jumbotron, whatever the hell.
Yeah, yeah. You were big on the Jumbotron at Wembley Stadium.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm gonna pass out and just like be on the stage, and everyone's gonna be like, "Whoa, what just happened?" You know, I just was picturing, I was like future tripping into the whole thing where I pass out on the stage at Wembley, and so like the first minute I was so nervous, and then there was like this moment when I looked up and it hit me, and I was like, I saw the sky because it's an open, you know, it's a stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I looked up and there's like a blue sky, and I just saw and I was like, because while you're performing, sometimes you're also having a dialogue with yourself.
Right, right.
Like you're talking.
Oh, yeah.
You're like doing what you're doing, but you also are having a dialogue simultaneously.
Right, trying to figure out what's next.
Yeah, and just like kind of observing and commenting. Mm-hmm. And I try not to do that. And I was like, you know.
Seeing who's paying attention and
Yeah, well, and so in this case, it was like me going, oh my God, don't pass, you know, just play your song. You know, just don't fuck up. Like, don't pass out, you know. And so I looked up and there was the sky, and it just had this moment where I'm like, you're standing in front of 80,000 people and in on a sunny day in London, which in and of itself is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the sun is shining and the sky is blue, and you're like here and you're doing what you've been, you know, dreaming of doing
your whole
life. And you better enjoy this. You know, it was just like, you just, and it just was like this voice going like, just just enjoy this, for fuck's sake. You know what I mean? Like,
and it's powerful. You can see it on the screen.
Yeah, and then it was, yeah, that, and then it just switched. And then I wished that I could, like, play 10 more songs,
right.
You know?
Right.
It was sort of like it was over so fast after that.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I didn't really hang out. And it was amazing. The backstage was unbelievable.
Did anybody go up to you? Like, a famous person say, oh, that was great?
Yeah.
Who?
The best one? Okay, so, all right, the best one. So, I was one of the only people that got a sound check, not because I'm more special, but because I was so inexperienced.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, we better let this girl. Like, my tour manager actually talked to the coordinator. You know, he was my sound person, too.
Right,
He said, you know, she's never played anything even, like,
yeah.
You know, a tenth of this size.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, this is her first time using in-ear monitors. Like, it was my first time doing any of this.
Right,
and they're
right.
And he's like, I really think that everybody would benefit if we give her a sound check. And so I was really one of the only artists that was allowed to do a sound check. And it was the day before. And so I was on stage doing my sound check. And I see these guys walking up to me after I finished. And it was Christopher Guest and, like, the other guy from Spinal Tap.
Right.
And I can't blank.
Harry Shearer.
Yeah, yeah. They're, like, walking up, and they're like, that was just amazing. They're like, oh, that was so great. And
wow.
I was, like, freaking out. I'm like, you're Spinal Tap. And then, so that was crazy. But that wasn't even at the show. And then after the show, Jamie Lee Curtis came up, and she's like, my daughter loves you. And,
wow.
like, and she was with Christopher Guest,
right.
and I was just totally starstruck. Because, I mean, I, you know, grew up on the, like,
Jamie
Fish
Lee
Called
Curtis.
Wanda.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, those movies were on repeat.
That's
on the
amazing.
VHS.
God, where does the time go? I wish we could talk for hours.
I know.
Can I have you sing one more song?
Oh, sure. Yes.
And then we'll talk real briefly about your new album, and then
okay.
I hope you come back. We'll have you and Beth come back.
That would be really fun. Maybe we can get Turner on, too.
Let's do it.
That would be really fun.
Let's do it.
Get Turner on, too, because he's fun to talk to.
Let's do it. And that show will go by even faster than this one.
Yeah, because there'll be two other people that talk as much
and Hannah
as I
will
do.
Be here, and we'll
have to have a special 2-hour show.
Yeah.
To accommodate
I'll pay
people,
extra.
All these people.
Yeah.
Hold on.
And what is the song that you're going to be doing?
This one is called "For My Last Number," and it's
okay.
a song about a magician in a traveling circus.
And we think this is the one that made my friend cry.
So I'm pretty sure it is, because
it might make me cry, so I will stop yapping and let you sing.
I won't laugh at you if you cry. But I'm pretty sure this is the song, but it's called "For My Last Number." It's about a magician and a traveling circus. In a dusty old tent 7 miles out of town, I set up my cards and the wind knocks them down. And I try for the people want to believe in miracles and magic and life's mysteries. Now, I was born early, I always feel late. I never catch up to the promises I make. And my mama, she cried when I ran away. When her tears dried, it was just another day. And I made my living pulling rabbits out of hats, girls on white ponies and balancing acts. Now I've grown tired, no more tricks up my sleeve. And for my last number, I think I'll just leave. Once had a girl and I loved her a lot. She knew my mistakes and she sweetly forgot. Well, I tried hard to keep her, I wanted her here. But all good magicians make things disappear. And I made my living pulling rabbits out of hats, girls on white ponies and balancing acts. Now I have grown tired, no more tricks up my sleeve. And for my last number, I think I'll just leave. And I put that smile on the face of young girls and boys wandered into this place. The red velvet curtain hides all of my fears. And when the show is over, they all reappear. something I want to believe. In this life of illusion, it's myself I have deceived. And a younger man's daydreams are quickly forgot. The tents all come down on a cold, empty lot. And I made my living pulling rabbits out of hats, girls on white ponies and balancing acts. Now time's made me tired, took the tricks from my sleeve. And for my last number, I think I'll just leave. Thank you.
And we're so lucky to have you because you're about to go to Atlanta.
Yes.
Now, I'm confused. No, you have a new studio album out.
It's not out yet.
Or it's coming out.
Yeah, but I mean, I recorded it, and I think I'm not going to release it as an album. I'm going to release it as a series of EPs, perhaps.
Is that going to be on one of the EPs?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
And you're doing a live album in Atlanta?
So... Maybe. I mean, I'm doing a show in Atlanta.
Okay.
And we might also record it and make some video content as well.
Okay.
But I'm going because my husband's doing a filming a movie.
Oh, good
so,
for him.
Yeah. So
your husband, Emmy nominee.
Oh.
Scott.
Yeah.
So he. So
he's not a slouch.
He's no slouch, and he doesn't look in the camera.
No, he's amazing. He introduced me last night because he's like. There was, it was very crowded and lots of talking, you know, people were talking in between, you know, setting up and stuff.
Right.
And he went on and was like, and introduced me, and he was so funny. And like, I got up and I'm like, I don't think I can follow that introduction. Like, you're so, good. He's such a good MC.
And I'm sure he is, but I'll bet you did.
I think I did.
Yeah. So how do people get a hold of you, and what do you got going on?
So I
hate to end the show. I have to.
Fine. Be that way.
I understand. I think I'll just leave.
Go right. Okay. Okay. I totally understand. All good things must come to an end.
I know.
So I'm on all the social medias, you know, like Terra Naomi, TerraNaomi. It's like wherever people do social media, that's where you can find me.
Except for Friendster.
Yeah, no, Friendster. I mean, maybe. We could try. So send me a Friendster invite, and we'll see if we can fire it up again.
Yeah.
We can, like, reignite all the – we can do Friendster, and we can do MySpace.
How awesome would it be if Al Gore did that?
What if he joined Friendster? No, I just had this image.
What if he's listening to the show, and he joins Friendster, and then he sends you a friend?
Send me a friend request? Yeah. That'd be amazing. I don't know.
And so – Terra Naomi on all social media.
Yeah, social media. So, yeah, if you live in L.A., I'm playing a few shows in September at Hotel Cafe.
And Hotel Cafe is a great place to see a show.
I love that place.
Yeah.
It's a great listening room.
It really is.
It's great acoustics and everything. So, yeah, and I mean, on my website and Facebook and stuff, you can find – I hate to promote Facebook. I hate it. But it's like I built my whole business on there.
TerraNaomi.com.
Yeah, TerraNaomi.com. Yeah. All the info's on there.
Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for having me.
So
it was really fun. Yes.
So much fun. And we got to do it again.
Yes, we will.
Hannah, get well. And
yes,
I'm going to call you. I'll call you in a few minutes.
Okay.
Everybody, goth comedian on all social media, and have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Bye.